In 2010, something mysterious started happening. Men from Toronto's gay community, also known as The Village, started disappearing. And no one quite knew why or how. At first it was just one man, then a few more, then a whole list of men had vanished. Whispers, rumors, and speculation started swirling in the LGBTQ community. Most of them were newcomers to Canada. Had they been deported? Had they just gotten up and left? Toronto and the world was about to find out that something much darker was afoot. I'm Andrew Kitchen, and I'm with co-host Farouk Edu.
Hi.
And Gerline Buttar.
Hello.
Welcome to Six Murders. On this podcast, we will be exploring six murders
over 6 weeks,
all of which took place in the six.
These are some of Toronto's highest profile and most notorious cases. Buckle up. Let's dive in.
Toronto's LGBTQ community, known as the Gay Village, is located in the Church and Wellesley area. It was a place where gay men felt at home, expressing themselves freely, believing it was their safe space. But in 2010, that feeling of safety was quickly replaced by an uneasy fear. In September of that year, Skandaraj Navaratnam, a 40-year-old Sri Lankan man, went missing. Friends called police when they found Skandaraj's abandoned puppy in his apartment. He was last seen leaving a bar near Church and Wellesley with an unknown man. This was only the beginning.
Several months later, in December of that same year, Abdul Basir Faizi, a 42-year-old father of two, was also reported missing. He was married, and he lived a double life, splitting his time between his family life in Brampton and his gay social life downtown in the village. His family reported him missing, and his car was found downtown. In October 2012, a third man went missing. Majid Kahan, 58, was married and a father. He was an immigrant from Afghanistan, and he also lived a double life in Toronto's gay community. You might be putting this together now. There was a bit of a pattern here.
At this point, the police set up a task force, Project Houston, to determine what was happening with the disappearances. But they were led in the completely wrong direction. They believed that the first missing victim, Skandaraj, had fallen victim to cannibalism ring led by a Toronto resident, James Brunton. After 18 months of investigation, Project Houston was dissolved and Brunton was cleared of any wrongdoing involving the missing men. Interestingly, one of the people interviewed by this task force was a landscaper who had dated and employed Skandaraj, Bruce MacArthur, but the police never pursued him as a suspect.
At first glance, Bruce MacArthur looks like a lovable old man, to the point where he even volunteered as a shopping mall center. He grew up in Lindsay in a small town, part of Ontario, just outside of Toronto in the 60s. Rural Ontario in the 1960s was probably not the easiest place to grow up as a gay man. So MacArthur hid his sexuality. He dated a local girl, Janice Campbell, in high school and married her a few years later. They moved to Oshawa and had a couple of kids. But MacArthur eventually broke the news to his wife. They got divorced, and MacArthur moved to downtown Toronto to begin living his true life. But he was doing more than simply living out his identity. He was wreaking terror on the whole community.
After the conclusion of Project Houston, gay men continued to disappear from the village in Toronto, including Salim Essen and Sarush Mahmoudi, immigrants from Turkey and Iran, respectively. Finally, when Andrew Kinsman, a 49-year-old active leader in the gay community, went missing in 2017, notably, he's the only known white victim at this time, finally, the attention to this matter started to ratchet up. But even at that point, the police continued to state that the evidence did not point to a serial killer. This was more than 6 years after the first disappearance of the original victim, Skandaraj, and at this point there were at least five missing men known to the police. Finally, the police found a note on Andrew Kinsman's calendar on the day he went missing. Bruce, 3 p.m.
The police put Bruce under surveillance for about a week and prepared warrants for his arrest. They tracked down MacArthur's vehicle that he got rid of, but he didn't clear the evidence and they managed to find four different men's DNA samples. At 10:30 a.m., they saw a young man walk into MacArthur's apartment building in Thorncliffe Park. The young man turned out to be a male escort. When the police entered MacArthur's home, they found Bruce in his bedroom. On the bed, there was a young man naked, tied up with a plastic bag over his head. It seemed like Bruce was about to murder him. In addition to this, they also found pictures of Andrew Kinsman and Salim Essen tied up in Bruce's bed.
Once the police had Bruce in custody, they obtained search warrants for the property where MacArthur stored his landscaping equipment in the backyard of an elderly couple's home. The police brought cadaver dogs that went nuts when they came to some giant plant potters in the backyard. Here's the thing. Bruce MacArthur was suspected of the murders of five men at this point. But when the police dug up those potted planters, they found the remains of eight men.
The evidence doesn't stop there, however. When the police searched through MacArthur's computers, they found meticulously archived photos and notes about each of MacArthur's victims. He had over 18,000 carefully curated photos. It seems as though Bruce MacArthur was specifically targeting newcomers to Canada and men who weren't openly gay. These marginalized persons seemed to be easy victims, and there did not seem to be a huge uproar when they disappeared. The notable exception to this pattern was Andrew Kinsman. Bruce was engaging his victims in sexual intercourse, then tying them up and strangling them before disposing the bodies in the planters. Ultimately, the police charged MacArthur with eight murders. The names of his victims are Skandaraj Navaratnam, Majid Kahan, Abdul Basir Faizi, Sarush Mahmoodi, Kirushna Kanagaratnam, Dean Lisowick, Salim Essen, and Andrew Kinsman. MacArthur pled guilty to all counts and is currently serving eight life sentences in prison. He will not be eligible for parole until 2043, when he will be 91 years old.
There were almost too many flaws in the police investigation to list. The police interviewed MacArthur way back in 2012, but they failed to identify that MacArthur had obvious connections to his victims. MacArthur's interview was never added to the Toronto Police record system, so when he popped back onto the police radar later in the investigation, they couldn't make the connection. MacArthur was also investigated and interviewed for an assault in 2016, and this still failed to alert police to the danger of this individual. The investigator, Sergeant Paul Gauthier, faced some disciplinary action for the failures for this investigation, but for the LGBTQ community, this still doesn't cut it. Many activists have decried the racism and homophobia which they say prevented the police from taking these missing persons cases seriously.
The tragic irony of the Bruce MacArthur murders is that many of his victims moved to Canada seeking the freedom to live as gay men, free from violence and persecution, only to fall victim to exactly that. Bruce MacArthur will go down in history as one of Toronto's most twisted and horrific killers. And for the LGBTQ community, the scars of his violence are still healing to this day. And that wraps it up for this episode of Six Murders. Thank you for listening. We all truly love and appreciate your support. Be sure to tune in next week to learn about the most terrible vacation ever, a love triangle, tourism, and tragedy, a bloody double murder-suicide. Until next time, cheers, Toronto.